You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra
Catskills.
Today,
East Durham. Catskills.
If you are hungry or just want to help community radio, come on out on Thursday, May 25th to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill to their community soup night. WGXC is organizing this night, Thursday, May 25th, with a live on-site broadcast, DJs, and soup. Come on out for a bowl of soup, conversation, and some music. Each Thursday night, Left Bank Ciders hosts a community soup night where volunteers make soup with proceeds benefiting a local nonprofit. All proceeds go to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. On Thursday, May 25th, the Left Bank Ciders in Catskill from 5 to 7 p.m.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
Wavefarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Richard Goldstein of Lafayette Hill, Pennsylvania. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, May 23rd. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Raymond Pignone reports in Columbia Green Media that the Catskill Village Zoning Board of Appeals on May 17th denied an application for a variance to convert the former St. Patrick's Academy building into 43 rental units. The state and the Hudson Valley are in the midst of an affordable housing crisis, and too few hotel rooms Greene County has too few hotel rooms for homeless or migrants. The now empty school is in an area zoned for just single-family homes, and the board would not allow the former school to change a variance to create apartments there. The Zoning Board of Appeals released a statement that said if they granted the variance, it would remain with the property, so another future owner could also use the variance and create apartments. The school has closed since 1988. And if it is not economically capable of being a school and cannot be broken up into apartments, the question is what use the school building, the two-floor gymnasium, and a large playing field with a view of the Hudson River could be for Catskill. The village board would have to vote to rezone the property if it wanted to allow another use of the building. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Rick Carlin reports in the Times-Union that an appellate division court upheld a lower court's dismissal of a lawsuit by local activists who want to stop Shepherd's Run Solar Farm from being constructed in Columbia County. The lawsuit sought to annul parts of New York's three-year-old fast-track system for approving large new solar farms administered by the three-year-old Office of Renewable Energy Siting, or ORES. The policy recognizes that global warming has forced a faster switch away from fossil fuels, so it clears certain regulations to allow solar farms to be approved more quickly than usual. The appellate justices concluded that the ORI's rules overrode the local regulations. Part of the May 18th decision says, quote, where the state interests are involved to a substantial degree in depth or extent, the state may freely legislate without home rule approval, notwithstanding the legislation's impact on local concern. Petitioners' remaining contentions, to the extent not expressly addressed herein, have been evaluated and determined to be without merit, unquote. The opinion from the Third Department appellate justices was unanimous, but attorney Gary Abraham said they were considering appealing to the Court of Appeals, the state's highest court. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that on May 18th, Greene County Industrial Development Agency Executive Director April Ernst said that the agency is partnering with the county to spend American Rescue Plan Act money to extend water and sewer lines to an undeveloped parcel on Route 23 they hope will have industrial uses soon. Mahwa Partners LLC, a company owned by Dr. James Schneider of Rexford, owns the property, and he met with the Caro Town Board on May 17th. Greene County legislator Harry Lennon claims a large company is about to be announced to use the land, but he won't say what it is. Lennon said, quote, they're a Fortune 300 company. They're not going to use a lot of water. They're not going to manufacture. They're going to assemble things, unquote. The land is at a traffic light where Route 32 turns south to Saugerties and into the town of Caro. Public hearings on the subject begin on June 5th, with two more later in the summer. Caro Supervisor Jason Watt said that, quote, one hearing is required to make another water district, the other is to make a sewer district, and the third hearing is to change the zoning to a wider form of commercial use, unquote. At the April 20th Greene County Industrial Development Agency meeting, Albany engineering firm Delaware Engineering was contracted to perform the design and construction of the sewer and water lines. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Alexandra Zizou reports in the Times Union that a fire destroyed much of the barn complex at Red Hook's Migliorelli Farm on May 19th. Firefighters from 12 local companies worked for almost 9 hours to extinguish the flames that destroyed a 20,000-square-foot barn housing equipment, supplies, and hay. No one was injured, but one baby raccoon was rescued. Ken Migliorelli, the farm's proprietor, still does not know what caused the fire. Migliorelli's uncle bought this land in 1969, but there has been a farm there for 100 years. In 1954, the original barn on the property burnt down. A GoFundMe fundraiser set up by Catherine Hardiman, a friend's daughter, is asking for $75,000, but has raised $86,000 as of May 22nd. Quote, most farmers are land rich and bank poor, unquote, Migliorelli said. Quote, you never have enough insurance to have enough. That could put you out of business itself, unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, May 23rd. Local early morning temperatures range from 42 degrees in Medusa to 53 in Kingston. Regional average soil temperature is 56 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high. Hopefully they take a dip to medium tomorrow. Today, a cool morning gives way to a comfortable afternoon. A random rain cloud may pass through around 5 p.m. If it catches you, you're gonna feel it because the winds will be around 10 miles per hour mostly all day. Overnight, temperatures fall to 49 degrees. Then, tomorrow, the weather finally gets interesting. A high of 77 happens at 2 p.m. So it's going to be warm, but rewind back to 12 noon, and that's when the rain starts, and it gets the strongest around 3 p.m., possibly dragging some thunder through our area. Let's say around 5 p.m. Rain stops at midnight, and we get a low of 44. Thursday, dry, high of 65. Friday, still dry with a high of 71. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:14 a.m., high tide at 6:08 a.m., low again at 1:06 p.m., and high again at 7:04 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 62 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:01 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:24 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun is relaxing just a bit. X-class flare chances have dropped to 20%. Plasma winds will be average at 524 kilometers per second with a thin density of 2 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 97, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
These are dangerous times.
I got to tune in some backyard birds, and you got the unexpected solo by the wood thrush. The wood thrush takes the solo and runs with it here with this recording. Some background support from the American robin, the house wren, the red-eyed vireo, the oven bird, and the tufted titmouse. In the lead throughout is the wood thrush. So listen here to a wood thrush at Wave Farm.
If you are hungry or just want to help community radio, come on out on Thursday, May 25th to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill to their community soup night. WGXC is organizing this night, Thursday, May 25th, with a live on-site broadcast, DJs, and soup. Come on out for a bowl of soup, conversation, and some music. Each Thursday night, Left Bank Ciders hosts a community soup night where volunteers make soup with proceeds benefiting a local nonprofit. All proceeds go to Waveform WGXC 90.7 FM. On Thursday, May 25th, to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill from 5 to 7 p.m.
Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Getaway on WGXC Acra. That's 90.7 FM. Today's guest is Dan Yolen. Born in Port Chester, New York, in Westchester County, Dan attended Horace Mann High School in the Bronx. He went on a two-month road trip across the U.S. with his family of five and a dog in a rented RV. Dan went to the Woodstock Festival in 1969 and also saw many great bands play at his hometown's Capitol Theater. He attended the Tyler School of Art in Philadelphia as an undergraduate and worked with his father in a coffee vending machine business for 15 years while attempting to launch an artist career as a painter. He couldn't make a living at it, but he did well enough to pay for lunch every day. The business was sold in 1992. Dan took his share, loaded up his guitar into his van, and drove off into the sunset. On his way out of town, he stopped at an animal shelter and picked out a six-month-old 45-pound Australian Shepherd Border Collie mix for companionship and protection. He named her Highway. They traveled all over North America for 2 years, living and eating out of the van. Dan particularly sought out remote areas. He traveled with a book that had information on all the natural hot springs in North America and sought out many of them. When Dan returned, he was deeply in credit card debt and worked for a marketing company for about a year. He noticed more than a few artist friends were becoming art teachers, including an old girlfriend who later became his wife. Dan went to Columbia University's Teacher College for a master's degree in art education. He got a part-time job teaching elementary art in the Bethlehem School District, then a charter school in Albany, and then he found his dream job at Wyndham Ashland Jewett in 2001. Dan married Leslie in 1999 and bought their amazing home in Bern in 2000. Since then, they've been making their garden, making art, and making music. Dan retired in 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic, but was called back to WAJ in 2023 to finish the school year after the tragic passing of the art teacher who took his place. Dan is looking forward to retiring again. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dan. I have the pleasure of knowing you, given that I worked briefly, part-time-wise in WAJ. And when Mike said you were coming on the show, I was like, yeah, lovely to see Dan and speak to him again. So how are you doing, man?
Pretty good. It's springtime, and I really get going in the spring.
I've got a couple of things to ask you. I know you've got an extensive garden. What do you grow?
Almost everything. We used to grow even more than everything, but I back with my old age. So we have, let's see, for fruit trees, we have peaches, plums, pears, Asian pears, and apples. Blueberries, blackberries, raspberries.
What kind of veggies?
For veggies, we've got asparagus, carrots, lettuce, just about everything you could name. Turnips, parsley, basil, tomatoes.
All right, right. Mike, mean you're going to his house for dinner?
I look forward to those days where Dan would bring in some asparagus or strawberries fresh out of the garden. Those were good mornings there.
Yeah. Can you sum up in a couple of sentences Woodstock? Come on.
Well, I probably don't remember most of it. I remember certain things like they were yesterday, and certain things I just was oblivious to. I gave an interview to the Woodstock Museum in Bethel Woods.
Yeah.
because they were asking for attendees to talk about their experience. And they were asking me questions, and I was most of the time saying, gee, I don't remember that.
Well, I'll ask you a couple of questions. A, did you pay in?
Did I pay? I have my tickets still.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. I was going to sell them during the 50th anniversary, but they really weren't worth that much.
What do you think they were worth?
I think from looking on online, they were about $50.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought they were going to say something like a couple of hundred, maybe a thousand.
There were, I think it was $24 when I bought them for the 3 days.
And that's a lot of money then.
Yeah, yeah. But it was worth every penny of it.
Well, what I was going to say is, what band or artist stands out for you?
Well, I heard Jimi Hendrix Monday morning standing in about up to my knees of mud.
Right.
And that stands out. That's probably the most memorable thing. And then when I was walking in on Friday afternoon, I heard, what's his name? I can't forget. See, my memory's going. The black folk guitar player.
Richie Havens.
Yeah, Richie Havens was playing. And he played for a long time.
That's right. About five songs.
Yeah. That sticks out in my mind. But I also remember by the time I found my seat, if it was windy, the music would kind of wafted in and out.
Right.
Or maybe that was my ears. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe it was the extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
Dan, you know, I wanted to ask you, you and your wife are passionate about gardening. You have an extensive garden. It's got to be a lot of work. It's got to keep you young. But
yeah.
I would imagine that you get a sore back from time to time. Is that accurate?
Yeah, but not as bad as my knees.
Ah, okay.
Thus, I go down on my knees to weed.
Yeah.
My wife, Leslie, usually bends over.
Sure.
But I can't do that.
Sure.
I can't do my toes.
Well, and I was going to ask you, too, there. So when you traveled across country, you were looking for the hot springs.
Yeah.
And do you do anything like that? Do you find that to be therapeutic in any way?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I have a hot tub.
Okay, all right. And so is there anything you can tell us about that?
I recommend it.
I was in a hot springs in Saratoga Springs in Wyoming.
Ah.
And I don't know if you were ever in there, but it was snowing at the time.
Wow.
And it was gorgeous. It really was. And there's something... just really relaxing about that, you know. Just sitting in a man-made hot tub. Nature's made hot tub. And just sitting there and it's snowing and you're not really worried about it, you know. It was lovely. It was lovely. Beautiful surroundings as well.
I had the same thing happen to me in a hot springs in California where I was just so relaxed that I barely even knew it was snowing.
Wow.
And as the snow accumulated, I realized that I'm in a remote area. I better get to a road where I'll drive out of here if I need to. But yeah, I was usually in very remote areas. There was a hot springs in Nevada that was down a 50-mile dirt road that was worth it. And I actually visited that a number of times, 3 or 4 times on my trip. And I had the whole place to myself. It was in the middle of the desert. And people had built stone benches inside it. So it was very
cool. Right.
And I'd spend a week there.
And did Highway, your dog, he jump in?
She wouldn't jump in, but she would get impatient. Get my ear.
Brilliant. I love hot springs, I must admit.
Yeah. So.
Now, Dan, your first song is Shenandoah.
And yeah.
I was curious, did you ever make it to Shenandoah National Park in Virginia on your travels?
Well, on other travels, but not on my two-year road trip.
I see.
I've been there a couple of times.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I backpacked there with my dad and cousin and my cousin's friend. But so why this song?
I'm a big fan of Bill Frisell. And that song, because it's a somewhat familiar song, Shenandoah, you can hear that melody go through it a lot more than some of his other more ethereal songs.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
The othering that we have seen first by Trump, now by him, is not only un-American, it's dangerous, and we have to right-size this landscape.
NAACP President Derek Johnson is defending his organization's decision to issue a travel advisory for Black Americans headed to Florida. Johnson tells CNN that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is pulling stunts to gain campaign contributions, but those stunts impact people's lives. The advisory follows the state's decision to cancel an AP course on African American studies and restrict colleges and universities from spending state money on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. South Carolina Republican Senator Tim Scott says he is running for president with a focus on education and crime.
The far left is ending cash bails. They're demonizing, demoralizing, and defunding the police.
Scott is the Senate's only Black Republican and says he is living proof that America is the land of opportunity, not oppression. Scott says he would reduce government spending and prohibit abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy if elected president. Debt limit negotiations continued Monday at the White House. House Republicans and the Biden administration have just 10 days to reach a deal to raise the debt limit to prevent a historic default. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer has signed a new red flag law aimed at keeping firearms away from those at risk of harming themselves or others.
So we must act, because week after week in America, we see grim, familiar headlines. Every place you can think of, every situation you can imagine has been shattered by gun violence.
Michigan is now the 21st state with an extreme risk protection law. Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen has signed a bill that both bans abortion after 12 weeks of pregnancy and restricts gender-affirming medical care for minors, calling it a win for the social conservative agenda. Democratic State Senator Michaela Kavanaugh calls it vile.
You are playing political games with the lives of children and parents in this state to get something.
Medical groups and advocates say such restrictions on gender-affirming care marginalize transgender youth and threaten their health. Arizona, California, and Nevada have proposed a plan to significantly reduce their water use from the drought-stricken Colorado River. In exchange for using 13% less water, state entities will receive more than $1 billion in federal aid. The river supplies water to more than 40 million people. And a group that monitored Arizona ballot boxes for signs of voter fraud during the 2022 midterm election has settled a lawsuit with the League of Women Voters of Arizona. The group Clean Elections USA has agreed to publicly condemn voter intimidation and stop its own conduct as well. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Residents of the District of Columbia may have a chance to implement ranked choice voting and open primaries by 2026. That is, if they can overcome opposition from the Democratic Party's leadership. A citizen ballot initiative for the Make All Votes Count DC Act of 2024 must collect signatures from 5% of the district's 524,000 registered voters to qualify for the ballot, over 86,000 of whom are unaffiliated voters. Those unaffiliated voters, the second largest group of voters in DC, can't currently participate in closed Democratic and Republican primaries without switching party affiliation first. The Make All Voters Count Act would create semi-open primaries where unaffiliated voters could choose which party primary ballot they'd like to use. The act would also implement ranked choice voting for federal, district, and local primary and general elections. The Washington City paper reports that the city council's at-large positions often have numerous candidates. In one recent race, the winning candidate had only 15% of the vote. Ranked choice voting requires a 50% plus one majority to win. The city paper also notes that Democratic leadership has opposed these reforms in the past, which are seen as loosening the party's grip on controlling the election. Advocates have 6 months to collect the required signatures. We have links to the Make All Votes Count DC Act details at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
And now, joining us once again is retired National Weather Service meteorologist Hugh Johnson for our weekly discussion of weather and climate. Welcome back, Hugh.
I'm alive and well.
Great. Welcome back. Hey, last week we talked about the tropical storm Mocha. Can you give us an update on that?
Well, Mocha is, of course, history. It slammed into Myanmar, and it caused a lot of damage. But the numbers, the dollar signs were actually seen awfully low. But then again, the infrastructure is probably very, it's an underdeveloped country, that kind of thing. So, but up to 500 people have been known dead. 1,000 injured, but I really, really believe those numbers are still way too low. I think over the time we'll find out it was a lot bigger than that. Again, as you probably, I think we discussed, it did not get big press coverage at all because it went into an underdeveloped country. And luckily, I think it hit at the wrong cycle of the tide. There was a storm in 1970 that caused much more deaths because it came at a higher tide and was a little stronger, but still a horrible situation. And again, an early storm, a very powerful storm that we can probably chalk partially up to climate change.
I appreciate you calling that storm to our attention. And I have a follow-up question, which doesn't at all mean to diminish the tragedy of the storm.
Okay,
I was surprised
sure.
to see the name Mocha with an M, because the tropical storms don't get named in alphabetical order like hurricanes.
Well, they do it differently, I'll be honest with you, I'm not an expert on this, but they do it differently in the Indian Ocean and the Bay of Bengal basin. I'm not sure there were, but I think there've already been a few this year. Our Atlantic season has yet to begin. I think there was one some tropical storm, but basically in that basin, the storms can start a bit earlier, and they have. But I'm not sure they do it directly with alphabetical order. So that was a good question.
Thanks.
And if we could we jump to the Canadian fires? We seem to still be getting smoke from those fires. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm looking right outside now. I'm seeing the sky getting, the sun getting a little orange already. It's funny. It comes and goes. Yesterday we had the clouds. And it looked like it was sunny, and then it got really smoky in the afternoon aloft. And I think the same thing kind of happened today, too. They're still going on. There's up to like 93 separate fires now. What happens is the main one started, and then you have crowning and sparks fly and other ones develop. It's very, very dry up there. They've had very little rain and quite warm. And it's one of the – they had a bad one 2 years ago. And apparently this one is not quite as bad as that yet, but it's getting close. And it looks like they're not going to get any real relief from the weather for another week. There are a few scattered showers up there today and tomorrow, but not enough to really put an end to it. The ridge looks like it's going to break down up there later in the week, and they finally will get a break next week. But until then, I think we're going to see the smoky skies. By the way, the smoke has gone over to Europe, around the globe, all the way around the globe from the jet stream, and then some of it has sunk south, and that been trapped in inversions, and they've had terrible air quality out west in Colorado and Montana, places like that. So at least we're not getting that. So be thankful we're not. We are getting the hazy sunshine, though.
Well, sticking with the theme of tragedies and disasters, speaking of climate change, we've heard that in the next 5 years, the Earth will experience even more record heat due to El Nino and continued carbon dioxide emissions. Can you explain a little bit of that for us, please?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been saying all along, CO2 emissions continue to go up in spite of all the talk of, better, greener energy, electric cars. There is some, we have seen some improvement, but the overall net influx is still going up, especially with undeveloped countries like India. So as long as that happens, we're going to keep heating it up. And now we're going to throw in El Nino that could be a strong one. It's looking pretty strong because it's already showing up on the ocean maps. It's amazing. It's pretty quick. So it could be being a really strong one. And that's going to add a couple of tenths of a degree because, again, as we talked about, the El Nino is one of the strongest currents. It covers the biggest ocean, double the size of the Atlantic, a lot of real estate for warm air to interact with the warmer water, and therefore you have the warm temperatures. Now, it's interesting. The outlook for the summer came out from NOAA the other day, and actually shows the southern areas of our country getting a break this summer, not quite as hot as normal. It'll still be pretty darn hot, but maybe not as bad as we've seen the last couple of years. We'll still be on the warm side. Mid-Atlantic, maybe not so much. That's all based on the El Nino, that it could be wetter south or drier north. That's us. And that's sort of the trend we've seen in the last few weeks, where it's been a little wetter now to the south, where it's the opposite when we had La Nina. So, but next summer, look out. Next summer could be the bad one. Usually it's the summer of the El Nino. In 2016, that was the hot summer. The summer before, not so hot. So I'm really concerned that could be the summer. We could have some really, really bad heat. We've already had some, terrible heat waves. We had the 116 in Portland, Oregon a couple of years ago. We've had awful heat waves in Europe, a lot of them, starting in 2003. And so we're just going to see more and more of that. And, again, heat kills in some ways more people than all other disasters. I mean, it's hard to believe, but it's just a stress on the body. And it's not like, you go out and get struck by lightning or anything like that, but just, and especially the elderly who live in cities, who don't even feel the heat, who don't have air conditioning, who don't have ventilation, it's terrible. So I think we are going to see some rough times ahead with a combination of El Nino adding a couple of tenths to that 1.1, 1.2 degree elevated temperature compared to when we started the Industrial Revolution. We'll add a couple of tenths to that possibly next year. 2016, still the warmest year on record. Next year, a good shot at beating that. And this year, it's not out of the question we could beat it too, but definitely next year.
And I just want to check on something you said. You said next summer may be even worse. You mean the summer of 2024?
Yeah, because that's the year. Okay, by that time, the El Nino, if it comes to fruition, will have a lot of time to add the heat to the atmosphere. It's already starting, but it really hasn't gone into full mode yet. But by winter, it should be. And then even if it weakens next summer, we will have already added the heat to start the summer off in a warm stretch. And it could be pretty nasty. 16 was a hot summer. It was a pretty darn hot summer across the entire North American continent. I don't think anyone was breaking any specific records, but I remember that was a pretty hot summer, especially the second half of that summer. If you look back at other El Nino summers, 82, 83 was a hot summer. 1973 was a strong El Nino that year, was a hot summer for most of the country. So, yeah, I mean, I think next year. But, again, this year we could – I don't want to let – we're still going to get hot weather this year. It's just that next year could be even worse.
And while we still have time, Hugh, can you give us the weather for the weekend, if possible, Memorial Day weekend?
Alicia sent me up to a challenging forecast. But the easy part is nice day tomorrow. Wednesday starts out nice, warm. It gets pretty warm near 80. Then a sharp cold front comes through with a few showers in the afternoon, maybe a rumble of thunder. Sharply cooler on Thursday night, Friday morning. Watch out. You might have to, if you're outside the immediate Hudson Valley Tri-City areas, you might have to think about protecting your plants once more time with temperatures getting close to freezing. And then comes the Memorial Day weekend. And Right now, I lean towards it being warm and dry with maybe a spot shower each afternoon. But, and this is a big but, there's going to be a cutoff low developing somewhere, probably to our south. But if that were to lift a little further north and suck in some southeasterly wind, we could end up with a lot more than a spot shower, especially Sunday and Monday. I don't, the models have been all over the place with that. But right now, I lean towards a mainly dry week. But I cannot rule out a shower, but definitely want to keep on top of that because that is subject to change, that Memorial Day weekend forecast. It's not etched in stone. Fingers crossed, looks pretty good. We do need the rain, but, of course, Memorial Day weekend, people want it to be dry. I do. My sister's coming up from Philadelphia. But, you know, keep that in mind. But, you know, it's still subject to change.
So, Hugh, I'm going to put you on the spot and see what your gardening knowledge is like, but I'm not. I'm getting the cue that we are out of time. So, as always, thanks for joining us for another discussion, and we look forward to talking with you again next week. Thanks for explaining all these little weather and climate issues for us, Hugh. Always fun.
It's a pleasure. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Yep.
Hi, this is Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and today I'm at Refugee and Immigrant Support Services of Emmaus, RISE, R-I-S-S-E, to talk with Kyra Christberg, Head of Adult Education. Kyra, I think this is your first time on Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting.
And your Head of Adult Education, can you give us a sense of what that includes?
Yep. So here at RISE, we welcome new families as they're arriving in Albany. And my chunk of it is that I help adults learn English and I help set up the programs that help them learn English, prepare for the citizenship class and test, and do everything they kind of need to get started and build a sustainable life here in the United States.
And when you say you help the newcomers, you get people from all different languages and nationalities. How do you work with different people at different skill levels?
Oh, yeah. We have people from over 29 different countries that speak about 26 different languages. We are so excited when we get a new country or a new language. I feel like we're kind of trying to collect them all because it's so exciting to just see people coming from everywhere. But our main job here is to make people feel comfortable so they can trust us. And once we kind of have their trust, we can help them learn English. We can help them sign up for further education, get degree equivalency, find jobs, those kinds of things.
And you mentioned 26 languages and then different levels of familiarity with English too, right?
Yep. We will have everything from people who weren't literate in their home languages to people who have studied English at a university level in their home countries or at some point during their resettlement journey. So we really try to meet people where they're at and work from there. And we always are really excited because we see a bunch of the adults. Everyone helps each other. People who speak similar languages will help new students who arrive. It's just nice to see everyone working together. And even though there are so many different languages, we really see everyone coming together to help everyone kind of learn English.
And then maybe talk us through the process. When someone new to the country comes to you for help, what's the next steps?
Oh, wow. When people first arrive here, they come from many different sources. The local resettlement agency, USCRI, sends students to us.
And that's the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants.
Some of our students come from other community organizations where they've maybe stopped in for help and were sent over here for English language classes. And then our most popular method is we get people through word of mouth. We'll get one person from one country will come in, they'll have a positive experience with us, and we'll see the next week we'll have three or four people from that same community, and then it'll double, and then it will double. That once we kind of can get one person from one community to come receive services, it quickly spreads that we're here, we're able to help, and we just get more and more students that way as well.
How many different individuals are you working with just in the adult education program?
This year so far, we've probably had about 250 students total. I would expect today about 120 students to walk through our doors, either in person or online. So we have about 125 students a day. That includes our tutor pairs, our online offerings, and our in-person classes.
250. How many people do you have working with them?
We've got 4 teachers, 2 administrators, and 1 career counselor, and we do the best we can with what we have, and our classes are pretty full, but they are very lively and fun and exciting, so I think it's been working out great so far.
Can you use volunteers at all, and if so, in what ways?
Oh my gosh, we wouldn't be anywhere without our volunteers. We have volunteers, especially in adult ed, working in so many capacities. We have tutor pairs, one-on-one tutors. We have conversation clubs on Fridays and on Sundays where students get the opportunity to chat with local volunteers to improve their English language conversation skills. We've got people preparing for the citizenship and naturalization test who need people to help just run the questions, prepare for that interview. And a lot of job applications that need help filling out. So we love using volunteers for things like that.
For the citizenship test, I've looked at some of the questions on that, and I'm not sure most Americans could answer the questions. Do you train the trainers?
I always joke that I don't think I could pass that test either. We do train the trainers. And we actually have been having great luck with people who are recent high school graduates, because high school students have some of the freshest knowledge of our government and how it works, because they've just had to take the Regents in that subject. So we've been finding a lot of luck with high school and college students. It's been really nice to see young people be able to help people prepare for that test and get more involved as citizens.
And speaking of that difference in education level, you had said that you have people with from 0 English to having studied at the college level in English. How do you work with somebody who has no English when they're in a group of other people with no English from different languages?
There's 2 parts to that answer. I always tell people, one, it's a little bit like playing running charades for a couple of hours. But honestly, when I first started this job, I was so nervous for my first day of teaching. And I remember the night before my first class teaching by myself, I sat on my porch and I thought to myself, don't think of this as teaching. Think of this as going in and helping your friends. And every morning when I leave my house, I never tell my partner, oh, I'm going to work. I always say I'm going to help my friends. And looking at the work through that lens, it then becomes much more natural. It becomes more about building trust, making people feel comfortable. Many of our students haven't felt safe and comfortable in a while. And being able to first win their trust, make them know that they're somewhere where they can make mistakes and won't be judged. And once you have that, the rest of it kind of comes easily. A lot of the English we teach is very physical, like the chair is behind the desk, those kinds of words. But once we start talking about abstract things, it becomes really challenging. So I do things where I make my students listen to music or look at a piece of art and then describe it. And that's where you really see them kind of struggle with finding the way to describe those more complex things. And I always say, there are no wrong answers, and I want you to make the mistakes here in this room. I just want to hear it come out of you, and we can work with what's there. And it's really fun. It's so interesting and wonderful to watch people learn how to describe themselves, learn how to describe things that are important to them. It's fun to watch people put together that puzzle and be part of it.
I always loved working with international students, because not only did it give me a perspective on their nations and backgrounds, but it gave me a perspective on mine with the kinds of questions they asked.
Yep. I had one student, I always think of it, where I had to correct her because she kept saying pans and pots. And I said, no, we always say pots and pans. And there's no reason why. And it just sounds wrong when you say it the other way. And just little things like that, that, like, I love language. I love reading. I love writing. And I think it's such an interesting way to see language and watch it develop and watch people explore it for the first time.
And I love the way that you talk about helping new friends. And you said before we started recording that you had a personal motivation for helping to welcome refugees.
Oh, yeah. I always tell people RISE has a big piece of my heart because my grandparents and my mother's side of the family were refugees from Latvia who were resettled in Albany in a very classic Albany way, where my grandfather worked for Tobin's, my grandmother worked for Fryhoffers. My mom, her first public school was here in Albany. And so 8 years ago, I moved back here. I inherited my grandmother's house. I learned about RISE. And about 2 weeks later, I came in here to volunteer in one of the English classes. And I'm not even joking when I say I've been here every day since then.
Well, not every day.
Most days. But I always think somewhere in some church basement, someone taught my grandparents to speak English. And it's such a privilege to be able to return that favor for other people. And I always think all the students we come through here, I see my grandparents and parents in them. And I would want them to be treated the way I would want someone to treat my grandparents. So here I am.
That's just beautiful. And if you could tell us, how can people be in touch with you if they want to volunteer, if they just want more information, if they want to refer somebody? How do they do that?
Honestly, I think the best answer is come by and see us. Come over to our office over at 240 West Lawrence Street in Albany. Come see what we do. Come meet our staff. We have a very friendly volunteer coordinator who will make sure she'll find the right spot for you. But there's something about the energy and the people and the day-to-day here that it's fun to see. Come visit us.
If people want more information, what's the website?
rise-albany.org.
RISSE-albany.org. And again, this is Bria Barthel talking with Kyra Christberg at Refugee and Immigrant Support Services of MAAS. Kyra, thanks a lot and good luck with your work.
Thank you so much. It's always nice talking to you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thank you.